It's Wednesday, the 12th of April, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And you join us for our last show of the 2016-17 season.
Ah.
I think there's a collective sigh of relief at our regular listeners there that they haven't got to, haven't got to be subjected to this for a couple of months. And we're better than last year. We've managed to record after an unsuccessful playoff weekend. So my tantruming obviously didn't get as bad, didn't get to the levels of last season. So we're going to look back at the weekend, the semi-win over Dundee, the loss in the final to Sheffield. We're going to choose our player of the playoff weekend before announcing our Red Army Roundup Player of the Year. Look at the new squad rules that were announced with regards to bench sizes for the Elite League for next season. We've then had a ton of burning questions through, and possibly my favourite Rahmite of the season. And and from those, have a look around the league at some of the other departures and maybe some of our thoughts on the Devils squad for next year, you know, compared to this current season. So plenty to get through. So we'd better get cracking with, well, Saturday and what I think everyone else in the league thought was going to be a bit of a walk in the park for the Devils in the early face-off. And, well, end of the first period, we found ourselves 2-0 behind and in quite a spot of bother, Sean.
We did, and we just completely lost our minds. There was no confidence in the team. They were playing like loose passes. Our puck retention was dreadful. We had no intention of holding onto it and creating plays. We were just absolutely woeful, and Dundee fully deserved their 2-goal lead at the end of that first period. There's no shadow of a doubt about it.
Yeah, Dundee came out hard, Aaron, but you know, as Sean said, you know, was it more Devils didn't know how to cope with Dundee, or just an off day, well, an off period from those guys?
I think it just, the way I took it, it was like, it was the first game this group of guys had played together, and they just didn't know how to pass, control the puck, and it was just constant turnovers. And I I think it was a little bit that we kind of looked past Dundee for a little bit, and took them a little bit for granted, and for the first period it turned around to bite us on the bum. So it wasn't a great start to the game, and my confidence grew lower and lower.
Yes, it wasn't 20 minutes to inspire anyone. The only, well, comfort that I took out of it was that we had an awful first period in the semi-final last season, and I think we ended up 4-0 behind at the end of it. So I was a bit more confident that we could turn a 2-0 deficit. You know, this team's shown that they can come back, and we came out firing in the second period. I think we only scored one in the second to finish 2-1 at the end with Joey Haddad getting the goal, Sean. But I felt that was probably our best period of the three, even though it doesn't reflect that on the scoreboard.
Yeah, without a doubt. And we horrendously outshot Dundee. You know, we put 14 on Joe Fallon. And we were back to ourselves. We were creating fluid movements, making pretty plays, putting the puck in the right places at the right times. Guys were going to the net. We were setting up well. And yeah, we just did little things right. And Fallon was very good for them, I will say. He stood very, very tall. And we looked like we were back in the game. We had a bit of confidence. We had a lot of momentum in that second period, and we carried it over to the third then.
Yeah, after the second, I did think there was really only going to be one winner in the game. And just over 3.5 minutes in, Mark Lewis, he knows when to score big goals. He gets the game tying goal just over 3.5 minutes into the third. And the Devils really didn't look back. You managed to increase the shot count in the third with 18 shots going in on net. Joey Martin got the go ahead goal 11.5 minutes into the period. And you know, you thought it was safe until the Devils took their first penalty of the game with 2.5 minutes remaining with Scott Hotham. And Dundee waited only 30 seconds of that and pulled Fallon to go 6-on-4 against us, which I thought was quite brave. I probably would have tried a little bit more of 5-on-4, but it worked for them. They didn't get scored on in that period. Don't remember any, you know, standout chances from those, Sean.
No, they seem to sort of not really know how, or sort of we knew how to handle them with the with that aspect. And being on the penalty kill, you always have that sort of that image of firing a puck on net, hit, going wide, ringing around, someone getting on the end of it and dumping the puck, and with it being on the penalty kill, you have that ability to not take the ice in. And I think Dundee were a bit panicked by that. So I'm in the same boat with you. I may have, you know, left it a little bit longer and gone with the 5-on-4, but they looked scared to make an error, and didn't, I don't really remember many clear cut chances at all.
Yeah, and I think that's, you're perfectly right in that. That pot shot was always in the back of their mind rather than going all out for it. Until right at the end, obviously, when they didn't really have a choice, and Andrew Hotham, with 10 seconds left, you rounded the game off with an empty netter to seal a 4-2 win. Not quite the walk in the park that, as I said, I think everyone else in the league expected. Possibly the Devils expected as well. Which is, you know, what caused that first period problem. And all it left the Devils fans to do was sit back and hope for an absolute war between Belfast and Sheffield. Didn't massively materialise. There wasn't the physical game that I was hoping for. All I wanted to see was hits and fights, match penalties thrown around, but we didn't get any of those. And Steelers won 2-0, being outshot 31-18. But Belfast really struggled creatively, struggled to do anything to break Sheffield down.
Mm.
And we're taking a lot of bad angle shots that, you know, a goalie like Moose is always going to save and pad away. So,
yeah, you know, like you said, we didn't get anything what we wanted from that game, but I did manage to squeeze a nap in.
Yeah, genuinely, you know, that was supposed to be the pick of the ties, and of the three games that matter at the playoff weekend, it was probably the worst. So, we're obviously not going to talk about the third place playoff, even though it was a joke of a score this year. Even more, the league needs to get rid of it. We'll very quickly mention that other than Mark Richardson, every nominated Devil won their respective awards. Mark Richardson, Nossap's, Colin Shields in Brit of the Year, and I think quite deserved. Colin Shields had an exceptional year. But yeah, all the other Devils picked it up, and it was nice to see, Aaron, that they did the awards after the Devils game, and the same for the Steelers and Giants, so that it didn't disrupt the preparations on Sunday for all those Devils having to go out and collect their awards.
And the ever important third, fourth place game wasn't interrupted with all that shit as well. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was a little bit of shock for me, to be honest, because I didn't really see. Like, and well, I didn't hear anyone saying that they was going to be announcing the award. So when they started giving them out, I was just like, a couple of people around me assumed it was just little plaques for making the first All-Star team. But then, you know, you're the elusive Coach of the Year, and I clicked on. But yeah, it was good, the fact that, you know, you get your award after a game, and you can worry about that instead of worrying if you did do a speech, or worrying about not being with your teammates for half hour or whatever it is to prep for the game next day. So definitely a good idea. And yeah, I'd be happy if they do that every year, or just scrap the third, fourth playoff game and do it then.
Scrap the third, whatever you do with the third, fourth place game, just do something. And so on to Sunday, and Steelers-Devils yet again this season. And the first period went really well for the Devils. Started really poorly. Really early on, 36 seconds in, John Armstrong runs Ben Bounds. Live, you can never tell, you know, intent, I think, especially as a fan. You're quite far away from the action. There was a Devils player down on the ice. But the video replays were circulating on Twitter quite quickly, and your Armstrong gets rid of the puck at the face-off dot, doesn't slow down, doesn't change direction once, and the Devils play on the ice, doesn't make contact with him, and he just goes straight through bounds. Mark Lewis followed in on the back of Armstrong, went to cross-check his face through the ice, slowed down and just gave him a little dig, and Armstrong sits 2 minutes for interference whilst Bounds receives treatment. I don't know. Andrew Lord said he was ashamed to coach a team that saw their goalie injured and nothing happened, and then the same team does it. And again, we don't actually do anything about it, either then or later on in the game. And it looked to be justified. You know, Guy Doucette gets a goal on the power play that led from the incident. to put the Devils in the lead, but then it's John Armstrong who gets the goal at 3:52 to tie it up. So you've got to think it's a bit of a sweet thing. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that Bounds was definitely shaken from the incident, because when you look at the shot that Armstrong pulled on him, and it was short side. Bounds probably could have done a bit better on it, and you know, you saw that. You know, we could come on to the later stages of the game in just a moment, but you look at his tweet yesterday that he's actually missing the preparation for the GB games before they head off to the World Championships to actually recover from it. And you look at the performance in the rest of the game. Bounds maybe didn't have his best game, but then you look at that incident 30 seconds in and you can see why, understandably why.
Yeah, and the third time that a goalie's actually had an injury resulting from a Steelers play, and it's a wider issue. There's your players talking about it in the NHL at the moment. Mm. You're right across the hockey world, but it's something that definitely needs to be addressed. The first period ended well for the Devils, though, with Joey Haddad and Joey Martin with a power play goal, getting goals in the last 4 minutes to put the Devils 3-1 up and in quite a comfortable position. But obviously, we knew that we'd been two goals down at the end of the first the previous day, so nothing was done. What started on the second period can, I think, only be described as a meltdown. Jeff Walker put the Steelers in, back in the game at 3-2, 4:24 in. And I cannot remember a shot from the Devils in those first 4.5 minutes. I can't remember any zone time or even two passes being strung together. It was a woeful start to the second, and made even worse when Colton Fretter got another one, 5:54, and then Levi Nelson on a power play at 8:45. So just over 8.5 minutes into the second period, the Devils have gone from a two-goal lead to being a goal down. It put us behind the eight ball. I think, as Sean said, Bounds letting in three goals in that period of time. He did face 17 shots in the period. Four goals with Walker getting another one right at the end, following a Lane Ulmer equaliser. Just a poor period of hockey from the Devils, a poor 10 minutes especially, that really just put us behind eight ball, and that led to us shortening the bench quite drastically, sort of running three lines at most, with Brian getting the odd shift, which would come back to haunt us later on. The Devils finished the second period a goal down, Aaron, and things weren't looking great.
Paul. We looked a little bit tired, lacklustre. We couldn't really create anything, and Sheffield was just hitting us after break, and you can't fault them. They played brilliantly, and I think the fact that we shortened the bench so early during the game, and I think it cost dividends, and we go on and not do very well. We come back into it, but it wasn't a great period of hockey, and I'm glad we turned it around just to get that goal back up by Hotham. I think it was in the third.
Yeah, just 54 seconds into third on a Levi Nelson tripping penalty that ran into the next period. Andrew Hotham, that I think most of us had written off from seeing after going down quite hard towards the end of the second in what looked like a slew foot on replay, but came back out for the third and got an unassisted power play goal to tie it up, and no more goals then in the third. Couple of chances to each team, and we went into continuous overtime, and we played 34 minutes of overtime. But throughout the Devils did have, sorry,
absolutely crazy. It was, in fairness, I think that is. I was chatting to someone about it the other day, and we were talking about the format of the overtime. Would you rather have they gone with the 4-on-4 or the 3-on-3? And I, in my opinion, that 20 minutes of 5-on-5 was the perfect way to go about it. Proper playoff game, gave it a bit more meaning. And with 3-on-3, we've talked about it this year, it's great fun, but it's, it is a gamble with what you do, and there's a lot of rushes here and there. And it was the perfect way to settle the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's no, you can't dispute it. You can't say that it was the luck of a penalty shootout. It was a breakaway because 3-on-3 is all breakaways. It was just going to be who's got the, the staying power, who can do it, who can put it in there. Your Devils did have a few chances. I think we hit the post in the first overtime period. But Ben Baum's made some of the most ridiculous saves I've ever seen across those 34 minutes of extra hockey. Like, just save after save that he had no right to make. Unreal. You know, of everyone, he didn't deserve to be on the losing team, especially. But as we said, shortening the bench in the second, I think it was needed. We had to stop the rot, otherwise we'd never even have got to overtime. But it did mean that there was nothing there. There was one play where a player went past Andrew Hotham, and all he could do was take a body position to try and get in the way because his legs had just left him totally. And he pointed for Bounds to go and retrieve the puck from the corner, which they would never play you choose, but, you know, going to go and rush there, happening. And Levi Nelson got the goal and assisted. And the only thing you could say about that goal is that I was glad it wasn't a mistake from a Devil or a soft shot that Bams let in, because it would have been disappointing. It was a good bit of work from Nelson and a really good finish. So it was disappointing. For me, I would say Sheffield were the better team across the whole of the game. Yeah. And, you know, deserving winners. So congratulations to Sheffield on taking the playoffs. The Swines.
Congratulations. I completely agree with you, Paul. They were the better team on the day. They like you said, you mentioned about the... They just looked like they had a bit more in them going into that that second period of overtime. We were just absolutely gassed on our feet. Probably because we did have to shorten the bench and chase the game, and that ultimately cost us because all our big guns had used up most of their energy in that period. And it's a shame, like you said, very disappointing, but full credit to Sheffield. They worked their bag off and totally deserved it.
And for me, Aaron, I would say it's quite come to one of the best games of hockey I've watched, and between probably the two best teams in the league this season as well.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It was an absolute spectacle from both teams. I couldn't imagine being a neutral for that game. It's so much entertainment. You know, the 11-goal game, there was loads of huge hits, you know, a couple of dodgy celebrations, you know, what more could he want? It was just absolutely fantastic. And although I did have a little sick session in the toilet in the first after the regulation, it was still one of the best games of hockey I'd ever seen and probably will ever see. And it's just a shame we couldn't come away with it. But 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
No, I would have taken it at the start of the year. Would have bitten your arm off. And just a hell of an advert for hockey, and you know, really good that it got coverage on the BBC or on the website. I've spoken to people I work with who've never seen hockey, who caught the last 20 minutes of it or caught the last 10 minutes, watched bits of it and just said it was quick, it was exciting. They didn't know it was like that. So, yeah, good all-round performance.
Especially when you think, Paul, that the last game they showed on the BBC was our Challenge Cup final against Nottingham last year, which is one of the dullest games of hockey you will ever watch.
Yeah, that wasn't... You know, again, it was continuous overtime, but not quite on the same level, I think is fair to say.
Yeah.
Right, we better do our Player of the Weekend. Sean, who gets your vote?
Ben Bounds played through the injury all through the game on Sunday. Absolutely, well, you tell me he stood on his head most of the game on Sunday towards the later stages. I was busy hiding in your left arm, so I didn't watch most of the saves he made, but I believe you and kept us in the game. And from the amount of time that I spent buried into your arm, they were in our zone a lot, and he must have pulled off some absolutely unreal saves. So Ben Bounds for me.
And from the amount of time you spent buried in my arm, I thought we might have been dating by the end of the game. It was you were quite cosy. But I've also decided I've got a future as a commentator because... Yeah, I kept you informed on that thing. Usually just with, what is Bounds doing now? That's horrific. Shouldn't be doing that. I think you genuinely probably watched about half the game from about 10 minutes through the third. So you should have asked for a refund and buddy your ticket. Aaron, who's your vote?
For me, it was Mr. Clutch. Joey, your dad, I agree with Sean. Ben Bounce played out of his skin and carried us into that overtime. But Joey, your dad, scored some huge key goals throughout the weekend. Played that an absolute blinder of a weekend, as he has done all season. And he's just been unstoppable and unplayable. And let's not forget that wonder goal he scored in the first period to put us 2-1. It was an absolute beauty of a goal. So just purely for the goal, he gets my vote anyway. But he did have a class weekend, so it's Joey Dad for me.
Oh, I've got the pressure of being a deciding vote in the last episode. Both make compelling cases, and Joey Haddad was phenomenal, but purely based on that third period and the fact that, you know, he was obviously, you know, badly injured enough that it's going to cost him a week's worth of training with GB. It's Ben Bams, I guess, my vote. An outstanding goalie, and all pretty much all I heard from the Steelers fans I spoke to, well, during the game, after the game, was how unbelievable he was, and the number of them who said he didn't deserve to lose that game shows that he was the guy for us. So yeah, Ben Bounce, congratulations, player of the weekend. And it's time to announce the Red Army Roundup Player of the Year. Obviously, we do our Player of the Week every week. And over halfway through the year, we decided that we should do a Player of the Year award for the guy who wins the most. So Sean had the task of going back through listening to the old episodes to find out, because we stupidly didn't write any of them down at the start of the season either. So if we're trusting Sean's count, because I couldn't be bothered to go back through and double check for him, we can announce that the winner is Mark Lewis. So,
Round of applause.
I wasn't sure how well it would record over Skype, so I didn't want to. I was going to try a drum roll, but thought it might deafen a couple of listeners. So,
you've probably got a couple of sound effects hidden in your PC, haven't you?
I might be able to find a drum roll and edit it back in. Now, I'm recording this now, and you'll realise that I haven't, because I'm also quite lazy, but I could have done it. So imagine that I did a little live show, guys, and that was an amazing segment. Yeah, it's not happening. Mark Lewis, he picked up the most awards through the season. And yeah, he's had a really good year. He was the Devils' unsung hero at the awards night. But it's good to know the guys at Red Army Roundup, we've got our fingers on the pulse, and we were singing his praises whilst he was being unsung elsewhere.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on what he's brought to the team this year, Paul, overall?
I think he's a bit of everything. He was signed as the tough guy. He was the replacement for Trevor Hendricks, with a bit of better skating ability, was pretty much what we were told to expect from him. And he's far surpassed that. His skating is unbelievable. I think he's probably one of the best skaters we've got. He plays well. He's got good hands. And some of the goals he scored this season, especially that Belfast Challenge Cup second leg over the water, where he scored two absolute classics. He got a goal in the Challenge Cup final, scored in the playoff semi-final to put us in the lead. You know, he's got big goals as well as playing well. He's fought tough guys. He probably beat Nickerson in a fight as well. You think all of these things. Yeah, that's just a great, great season, and yeah, well deserved for me. Aaron, as big a fan as I am, as I've just sung his praises?
Probably bigger, Paul. This weekend, well, you take it, game tying goal in the Challenge Cup final, game winning goal in Belfast, game tying goal in the semi final. You know, it doesn't get bigger games than that. He scores in all of them. He doesn't put many points throughout the year. He always put big hits in. He seems like a really good team guy and a room guy. He's a big body, plays fantastic, skates brilliantly, suits the Elite League perfect with the size of the ice we play on. So what more can you say? Absolute hell of a player. And the fact that he's so young, I hope we get to see a lot more of him so he can do what he's done and a lot more and score even more key goals, hopefully in next year's playoff final.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, we've had always the good thing for a good player that you want to keep. He's currently dating a local girl as well, so that always goes in our favour. But Sean, his toughness as well this season, you think back to that Belfast game where we were missing Bordelot, and I think Matt Nickerson thought he was going to rule the roost, and you know, Lewis showed that he wasn't afraid to stand up to anyone.
Yeah, absolutely not. And you look at Lewis' stats through the year. He played 45 league games, one goal, 12 assists, for 13 points, only took 36 penalty minutes, scored 3 goals in the Challenge Cup competition, one of which was in the final and 2 of which were in the semi-final. We are backs against the walls. And like you said, Paulie, he's just brought a bit of everything. He's a very, very, very good skater. His hands are very good. He is not afraid to go toe-to-toe with anyone. I think he fought Fitzgerald as well in Sheffield. Absolutely yes. Got. Yeah, and he's, I think during the slip afterwards, he absolutely walloped his head on the ice. And I think he wanted to come back and play that night because we were struggling, and he didn't ultimately. But the guy is an absolute warrior. He plays the game in the right way. He's tough when he needs to be. He's smooth. He plays good passes. And his mentality to just drive to the net when he needs to up the wing, as he's a dual position, he can play on the wing as well. So I think he's been massive for that. And can't say enough good things about Mark Lewis this year. And that's why he's ultimately been nominated our Red Army Roundup Player of the Year. So congratulations to Mark.
Yeah, excellent season. And that's everything we need to talk about in terms of players and games. That is the season done, and it's time to start looking forward. Quite sad after such a good season. The makeup of the teams are going to be a little bit different next year with the new squad rules that Elite League announced shortly after the playoffs. Import limits staying at 14. However, the restrictions around EU passport holders are being lifted, so 14 imports from wherever you like. There'll then be 5 British or senior British players, as they're being called, so over 23, which will make a bench size of 19. And that can be bolstered with up to 3 Brits, providing they're under 23, born no earlier than 1994. So you get a maximum bench size of 22. You can still run, you can run 4 lines with 22, but you need at least 20 to run a full 4-line contingent. So I guess the plan is that it's going to encourage those teams that want to run 4 lines to have at least one under 23 player on the ice. Sean, do you see it? What are your thoughts on it overall? But, you know, do you see it working to develop new players?
It's difficult to say because you will have the teams that want the 4 lines. But then if that 4th line, listen, if you're going to develop talent in this league, your 4th line isn't the place to do it. Because they're going out there against all the other teams who are playing 3 lines. And you look at our 4th line, for example, this year. Okay, so you've got CJ, Luke Pigott, and then you've got an import in, like, I think it's been Patrick Bordlow for the majority of the year, as an example. And I don't see how a player who's under 23 can develop playing the same role as Luke Pigott and Chris Jones did against another line in the league. I just don't understand how that can be good for development. And they don't, most of them, in fairness, probably don't have the talent to play on the third line. So it's really, really difficult to see where you're going to fit them in unless you get basically a Chris Jones or a Luke Pigott who's 22 and willing to grind it out at that level. And I just don't see where the players are going to come from if they are going to do it. And if it means the death of 4-line hockey, then it's going to be quite disappointing for us. I think Sheffield have already got their contingent all set up with Cole Shudra, Liam Kirk, and
Brad Day qualified.
Possibly, yeah. So there's their 3. They're already sorted with that. They've got 2 under-23s who've been training with them all year. Cole Shudra got an assist on Colt Fretter's goal in the playoff final. So, you know, he's proven he can show up on a big occasion and play on that stage. And I think next year with that, that'll see them get more regular minutes. They'll be much more included in the part of the system. It's a great move for someone like Sheffield who've got an academy. As for ourselves, I am not entirely sure that it's going to be beneficial to us because I don't see where we are going to sign those under 23 guys from, and I don't see where they're going to fit in to our system. You look at a guy like Callum Bugloss, under 23, didn't play that many games for us last year, played 1 or 2 up in Coventry, and you know, looked fairly at home, more so than he has most in his previous spells with us. But then when it comes to the big occasion, playing in this type of system that the UK is, where all your games are important, are you going to go and risk someone like Callum Bugas playing a regular shift out there? It's something which, it works in the NHL because you play 82 games that you just need to win, say, 45, 50 of them to get to the playoffs. And then your players have developed enough for them to compete when it matters in the playoffs. And unfortunately, we don't have that system over here. So it's difficult to say, to be quite honest with you, after that quite long-winded discussion with myself.
Yeah, that's a good conversation with yourself. I think the interesting thing is with the structure is there are enough slots to have, you know, a seventh. You can have 60 men playing regularly. You can have 12 forwards playing regularly. And have a 13th forward and a 7th D-man to bolster your squad. So you think, well, Bugles would be your 7th D-man. Lovely. You can sit in the bench and get shifts if needed or as and when games are comfortable or lost causes to get his time. But is that helping his development as much as when he's playing in Swindon, playing probably 15, 20 minutes, if not more a night? He's been, you know, getting a few points in Swindon, probably getting a few special times, ice time, you know. But then, I suppose, on the other point, EPL is lowering their import limit next season again, down to 3. So the quality in EPL is going to be lower. So the guys playing at EPL, they're going to have an even bigger jump when they step up to the Elite League. I think EPL have done good to lower the import limit, try to make themselves a bit more of a development league. But there's nothing for those guys to bridge the gap. And like you said, you know, we had a bit of a, we discussed it at random times. You know, players playing in EPL who are young, yeah, there's guys like Ivan Antonov. I think he's 19. He's had 150-odd games for 140 points over 3 or 4 seasons in the EPL at his age. That's excellent. Well, you'd say sign him up. But then, as you said, if you put him on the fourth line, that's not his game. The very best that's going to happen is he becomes a good grinder. But what that does is takes away all of the upside that he offers because he never gets the chance to show he can do it further up the lines. And you know, can't really see Andrew Lord risking signing a 19-year-old Brit to put him on a third or a top six because, as you said, you can get import to a better. So, yeah, it's a difficult catch-22 situation. Aaron, I suppose, you know, looking at it logistically in terms of the players, you would imagine that if Tom Murdy stays as backup, being over 23, meaning that we need 3 skaters under 23 if we want to run a full bench, that there doesn't really seem to be space for Chris Jones and Luke Piggott in the team next year, would you think?
It's a very unlikely chance because if you think about it, if we're going to try and run that four-line hockey role and we keep Murdy, then where are you going to play them under 23 players, you know? So I think it won't benefit them playing in the role that Piggott and CJ play in, but that's the only place they're going to fit into this team. So I can't see any space for them to next season. It'll be sad to see them go, but I can't see them being able to, well, compete enough to make top 3 line hockey. So we realistically have no use for them.
Yeah, we've assuming that Brits come back, we've only got 5 spots for senior Brits. You've got Bams and Murdy, Richardson and Batch and Matt Myers. That's your 5 there. Obviously, if you can re-sign them all, if we want to re-sign them all, you know, however it goes, you know, those guys are obviously getting a lot more minutes. You know, I don't think CJ or Piggott saw the ice at all over the playoff weekend. And Sean, do you think possibly we might see Devils looking at going 3.5 lines as we did over the weekend with 3 lines, then 2 imports on your 4th line? And then just double shifting a forward on rotation so that everyone is still playing less minutes than they would have done.
Yeah, possibly. Like you said, it's interesting whether we can get those. I think it all does depend on whether we can get those Brits and whether they're of a quality that we can put them out there. Because if they're just going to be sat on the bench, what's the point in having them? You know, it's all well and good saying, yeah, we've got a full roster and we run 4 lines. But if you're not going to run that 4 line, that 4th line as a grinding line and on a regular basis, then what's the point in having them sat there? And what good is it for them to develop? Number one, it's costing you money to you know, because they're going to want paying because it's a professional league. And if you're paying for them and not using them, what's the point in having them? So, you know, I can see it being that sort of 3.5 and then rotating someone, I could see that happening, but then have we had the success this year because of four lines? I think we probably have.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the difference that we've seen. And you know, as you said, I think Sheffield are set up for four-line hockey already with the current rules are in there.
Yeah.
They've got players getting ice time. I think I doubt that any of us will have noticed. It's one of those things you don't notice on other teams, but you know, Liam Kirk's a player who's put up points all of his career.
Yeah.
Mm. Is he getting fourth line roles when he's playing with Sheffield, or are they putting him up the lines?
I think he's been playing on the fourth line, but I don't think he's played that many games for them this year because he's been obviously regularly playing in the EPL and he's so important to his team there that I think they're a bit reluctant to let him go that often.
Yeah, so you know, there's the interesting thing, I suppose, if you bring someone up. You could even look at having a couple of players on a two-way, maybe two players with Swindon, and you rotate it. They have a week, one as a weekend with us, one with Swindon, so they're still getting ice time, and you're getting that exposure to elite league hockey as and when they can as well, which might be what you know, the club look at doing. And I personally think that would be the best solution, but it's finding players willing to do it, and you're a Swindon prepared to have a disruption to what would probably be, for them, higher-end Brits, whereas you know, for us, they're going to be role players playing very limited minutes. I personally think it's good that the league is looking at sort of the development side of things. And, you know, you'd like to think that, you know, as this goes on, there will be more Brits coming through that can do that. And, you know, the teams will build themselves with the expectation of having these guys and blooding them as and when they can. So I think it's interesting. I just think it's good to see some forward thinking from the elite league in terms of you know, the structure and things like that.
Is this where you can see people like Edinburgh and Fife, for example, who do have that good junior system, actually benefiting it and being able to run four lines? Because people, you know, if for example Fife run four lines with the young Brit kids playing, and someone like ourselves can only run three lines, does that make Edinburgh more competitive against us because they can afford to have those extra bodies? If for example we didn't get those under 23s.
It depends on the quality, doesn't it? It's,
of course, yeah.
You know, if you're running a fourth line of under 23s who are woefully out of their depth, then they're A, not going to get a lot of ice time for very long, and B, if they're getting scored on consistently well, there's no benefit there. It's, if they can get them into the team and get them up at the right quality, then yeah, it would be good for them. I think it's, you know, something that will help teams with academies and, you know, the Devils have obviously invested in junior hockey in the last couple of years. But it'd be nice to think this will maybe foster some even stronger relationships to try and get that. You know, churn of players that we had, it's probably nearly 10 years since we've had someone come through who's, you know, made a real impact up in the, you know, in the elite league. Probably Ben Davis, the last one, Sean.
Yeah, I probably would have said Ben Davis, yeah.
You're thinking that's quite some time ago now since we've had anyone come through the system. So, you know, whatever was being done way back when, hopefully get that conveyor belt going again. So, interesting coming up. And again, it just makes the off-season a little bit more interesting that you're going to be looking at the types of players, you're going to be looking at the age of the Brits that people are signing to see, are they seniors, are they going to be those ones, what type of lines are you running? And you, as we said as well, the decision around if we keep all the Brits, if the Brits all want to stay. We've obviously got a London-based defenceman in Josh Batch and a London-based team in Guildford joining the team, which, you know, so logically you think, oh, maybe that's going to be tempting for him. Yeah, so quite a lot of things up in the air. Anything else on squad, Sean? Before we move on to our...
No, particularly. Let's move on.
Excellent. Well, you're our social media correspondent, so what have you got?
Okay, we have a Ramite from Mr. Jason Manley. Came in to us very last minute, and as you said, Paul, it's probably your favourite one of the year. Jason loved that we had an epic season, hated that we still haven't had a Ramite Raw from Aaron in the old style of the MGM Lion. So, Aaron, you still do, I think.
We know we've got a surprise for him, so... I think we'll release it when this podcast goes out.
How exciting. How exciting for Jason.
Yeah, enjoy. We also had a couple of burning questions. One of them did come from Jason Malley, who asked the question, who is this season's biggest cockwomble? David Sims or Paul Thompson?
Aaron.
Paul.
Oh, well, I was asking Aaron, so I asked that first.
This is going to me, is it? We all know David Sims is a bit of a
clown.
This is special. We'll go with special. He's been around a while. He always does these stupid things to get himself heard and listened to. So to be honest, I'm used to David Sims. He's a bit of a, like I said, he's a bit special. I'd be impolite. I'll say special. But for me, the biggest cockwomble of the year award goes to Mr. I can't even think of his first name.
Paul Thompson.
he often looks like a reindeer. He's full of excuses. How he's got a job for this year, I don't know. The amount of money he must have spent to get our team together, and you know, they won a four game championship. I'm dumbing it down because we didn't win it, I know. But yeah, and the fact that he just thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread, and all these excuses, booting our changing room door, taking it out on their sticks. I think he's I get he's an emotional guy, but the approach he takes towards hockey and the way I see him as a person, I just think he's a cockwomble. So, yeah.
You can tell we've given Aaron permission to use one specific word that, you know, we probably wouldn't usually use on a family-friendly podcast. And you took full advantage, so well done for filling your boots there, Aaron. It's a difficult one between the two.
Can I make my case and then you take the casting vote?
Go on, then.
Okay. I completely agree with what Aaron says with regards to Paul Thompson and what he does. However, I will say that Dave Sims this year has just gone above and beyond to make a scene for himself. I personally do not have a problem with Dave Sims. Whenever he's in Cardiff, he's always been very nice and always good to have a conversation with. But the whole issue in the order of the year with regards to the people on the Kiss Cam and the problems that it caused and the negative publicity in the LGBT community portrayed the Elite League and the sport in such a negative light that that is my biggest case for him. And I'll also say that then he does glorify what Thompson does by being a media guy, and everything bad and negative that Paul Thompson does is then amplified by Dave Sims. And I just think that Thompson is a cockwomble. I will fully agree with Aaron on that. But David Sims has been enough of a cockwomble in himself and then been a cockwomble to amplify a cockwomble that he is the biggest cockwomble.
Cockwomble.
I feel like we've got into some sort of inception loop of cockwombles here, Sean, that I'm not quite sure which is the real level anymore.
Cockwomble.
you've had your quote in Aaron. It's a difficult one, isn't it? There's been so many things this year. The goalie running thing is a tactic, not good. The stuff Thompson says, the fact that Sims puts it out, you can edit interviews. It's not that difficult. I edit out a lot of what Aaron says most weeks. He doesn't listen back. What he doesn't realise is that this goes out as a two-man show most weeks.
I know.
But I think the fact that Dave Sims is so far up the backside of Paul Thompson, we can probably count him as one person and they can share the vote. So
Paul Sims and David Thompson.
That's it. That's the one.
So in answer to your question, Jason, I think it's impossible to tell the difference. Yeah, it's impossible to tell the difference, yeah.
Excellent. I genuinely, when I read that question, thought, oh, that's a 2-minute throwaway thing. And we decided to run with it. I didn't say cockwomble, so cockwomble.
Cockwomble.
Anyway, moving on from the cockwombles. We did have one from Derek Farr, who said, apart from winning the CHL, how does Andrew Lord top this great season? Aaron?
Well, we won everything else, and we didn't win the playoffs, so my answer would be win the playoffs and everything else. But, yeah, what else can the guy do? He's done everything. I'd like him to complete. I like the team that we signed next year to compete at a certain level in the CHL. I'm not expecting us, you know, to qualify for the next round or even win it. You know, if we win a game, even if we score a goal, I'll be happy. But that's the only thing, really. Competing in the CHL at the beginning of the season, win the playoffs at the end of the year, and, you know, there's the question of the three trophies in the middle that Deacon, if he feels like it, he can win those two.
Yeah, I think the obvious one is to win it all. I mean, that's got to be the goal for the organisation next year after, you know, the disappointment of this weekend. And yeah, in the CHL, winning a game, it'd be really nice to win a game that wasn't a dead rubber. I think we'd be the first British side to do that. Obviously, that's going to fully depend on the level of team that we face, because there's some teams that, you know, there's not a hope of that happening against, but I think others maybe a little bit closer to our level as the, you know, the level of the Elite League keeps on rising. So yeah, I think the playoffs at the very least, and everything else at the very least.
For myself, obviously if he wants to top it, really top it all off, then yeah, win everything and win a game in the CHL. But realistically, if, you know, it's been such a good year that next year, if we win a game in the CHL, regardless of whether it's home or away, and win the league next year, I'll consider it as successful as this season, without the Challenge Cup, without the playoffs. In my mind, if you win the league title every year, it's classed as a successful season if you don't get anything else with it. So just go and win another league title.
Being serious, I think, yeah, that's probably the one. You don't get years where you win the majority of trophies every year. I do want us to get used to winning. I want us to win something every year. A dynasty, you know, be that Sheffield team that, you know, as they were for a long period, as the Devils were before that as well. That you every year you think we're going to win the league, and you know, you win it almost as many times as you don't. So if not more. So yeah, let's build a dynasty.
So just win the league, and then if you add a cup, it's a Brucey bonus. Whereas this year we won the cup, and then that was still a Brucey bonus then, but just the fact that we were still in the league hunt was massive for us. And like I said, it's been such a good year that just do that again. It's fine. Just get on with it. We had one from Lisa who said, in interviews, Andrew Lord often says to a man or for a man. What does this mean? Paul, I think we discussed this, that it basically means down to when he's talking about the team collectively, that each player did what was asked of him. I think that was, you were in agreement with that.
Yeah, so to a man, rather than it being the number two, it's two as in T-O. It'd be a lot easier to write that down than say it, but yeah. You know, to a man, everyone performs, you know, and
yeah.
I can't think of an example for
as in to a man, we record this podcast exemplary.
Yes, but he's usually a lot more truthful than that.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for that.
Did we have more?
We did. We had one more from Michael Brain, who said, out of all the Devils players, who do you think is the most likely to leave?
I think based on the new squad rules, I think one of, if not both, CJ and Pigott, I would imagine, will be moving on, because you just can't see there being space for them in the team under the new structure. Looking at, you know, guys getting more regular minutes, Patrick Bordalo possibly going, you know, a big expense there. Denny Cooney, a guy that came in, did a good job, but didn't properly throw his arm in the air, and you say he's got to have another contract. And then, you know, someone like David Bryan, who's been an excellent role player, but had the benefit of having an EU passport. With that restriction lifted, you know, are the club going to look at other options? So I think they'd probably be the three in terms of guys getting regular minutes when they've played that I would be most, not most surprised, but okay, least surprised if they left, is the best way of wording it. Aaron?
I think I'll agree with most of those guys. You know, it's hard to say. You don't know who's going to stay and who's going to go. We've had a great year. You know, the coaches and the owners and the staff may award the players for doing so well and might give them contracts. You don't know. It's all going to be up in the air. But I think for me, it's probably going to be Patrick Bordolo. You know, great player, always had an impact when he was on the ice. Great skater, played well. But I think just purely because of the expense, I think you can get a higher quality forward or a lower quality, a cheaper enforcer for the money we pay for him. So that's the way I would look at it. But, you know, like Paul said, you've got CJ and Piggott, who's going to be in, well, they could be out of a deal because of the new rules. Bryner, the same thing with the no EU. So is there really much needed for him? I'll be sad to see everyone go because we've had such a fantastic, memorable year. But that out of them four, it's probably those. Even you know, Jake Morissette, quite, you know, he's getting on, still a fantastic player, still does everything right. But you know, he carried a big knock. You've seen him skating around the playoff again, which was wonderful. But you know, like I said, it could be anyone. Anyone could go. Anyone can stay. You don't know until middle of August when we start play our first game and we've got our first team in. So
yeah, Sean, for you, anyone else sort of stand out as you wouldn't be surprised to see him go or favourite?
I think with regards to a couple of the guys who may be looking at retirement, maybe I do agree with everything you said with regards to those. But you look at someone like Lane Elmer who came over on a university deal, just had a baby, getting onto the later stages of his career. Had a bit of a slow start here. Is it time for him to hang him up? You know, he's won the league. Is this as good as it gets? You know, does he really want to do that to his body next year and come up short, or does he want to go end on a high? So, I could see him moving on. But then again, I wouldn't be too surprised to see him come back because I think he's been excellent and I think he's been our best player in the second half of the season. Same for Sean Bentivoglio. I think he's maybe looking at heading home and restarting his life out there. And someone like Scott Hotham, who had a bit of an injury earlier in the year, they mentioned that they wanted to play one more year together, the Hothams, and then they would take it as it comes. But I think Scott Hotham and myself has been our most under the radar defenseman. I think he's been fantastic for us this season. And like they said, you have to make changes. You can't stand still. Guys have to move on. We need to upgrade in other areas. And it'd be a shame to see any of them go, to be honest with you. But most likely to leave Patrick Bordolo, because I think you can get another good quality scorer. And as Aaron said, an absolute lunatic for the same price. And secondly, I think that someone... I'm going to go out on a whim and say Guillaume Doucet. Yeah, mainly because I don't think he's quite hit the heights that we expected him to this year. And I think next year he may get left behind by the time the league improves further again on what it did last year.
Excellent. Well, that's our thoughts. If you know, listening in, you think you massively disagree with any of our picks, or think we've not mentioned someone that you would expect not to be with us, drop us a tweet. Or a message on Facebook. We do check it, even if we very rarely post on there.
I actually think we did have another burning question as well, which I will have to just double check on, from Tony Dickin. Hold on. I'll just go and find it. It just occurred to me. Hold on.
While Sean's trawling social media, just sort of around the league, sort of the major departures being announced. Mike Forney has announced he's left Belfast. Alex Mickey Forek from Nottingham, and Matt Keith, the captain of Brayhead, have all said that they won't be returning. Mike Forney looks like he's heading home, but he's a guy that we've said for a couple of years would love to see in Cardiff. You know, a guy like Nicky Forek, Aaron, you know, gritty player, seems to be very popular in Nottingham. Would you be disappointed to see him in Cardiff?
I think I would be. I think he resembles the role of Jake Morissette and Guillaume Doucette too much, and even if we keep one of those guys, or, you know, he's just going to be a wasted player. I think his size layers him down a little bit. You know, he's not afraid to throw himself about. You've had a couple of fights with a few players this year as well, so it doesn't make a massive impact. But, you know, I've only seen him a couple of times to judge him, but he's a decent enough player. But if we sign him, I can't help but be a little bit disappointed, because
you've not seen a grip on anyone we've got. Is that the point, I guess?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think he's, you know, forwards like him come a dime a dozen, so there's bound to be 1,000 more just like him who are probably better, / younger, / bigger or better than him. So, you know, I'm not putting him down, he's a great player, but I would be a little bit disappointed to sign him back, yeah.
Well, Sean, have you dug out your question yet?
I've just found a Ramite from Tony Dickin. Said, like that we have had an awesome podcast to listen to all season. Hate it's going to be a while now until the next one. We don't disappoint, Tony. With this one goes out especially for you. It's mainly just to hear what our views on the roster rules, which we've already discussed, and how we think the Devils will deal with it personally. So, with regards to our Brit Pack poll, obviously you look at someone like Bounds, Murdy, Richie Myers. I think those guys are pretty much nailed on to come back. But with regards to that under 23 rule, do you see us maybe using one of those slots to lose Murdy and to go with a younger netminder? Is that something which you could see us doing?
I could imagine it. I think it's, you know, I'd be surprised if it wasn't something the club at least thought about, you know, in terms of the structure of the team. But for me, you look at Murdy this year, he's come into games. Your Bam's had a few knocks this season. I think, you know, and Murdy has won us games. I think he's won us. We've won more points with Murdy in net than the difference that we won the league by. You know, I don't know what the situation with young goalies in other leagues is. But, you know, off the top of my head, you know, we mentioned Brad Day is under 23. I don't think you could say the same about Brad Day from what we've seen of him when he's played, from his stats when you look at them. You know, I wouldn't, you know, Tom Moody went to Sheffield and won a game as a starting netminder. You know, if there's another under 23 goalie in the country that could do that and then back it up with other big wins in the same season, they've been kept quiet. They've been going under the radar. So whilst, yeah, it would give you another senior Brit to have, you know, playing, I think it'd be hell of a risk. You know, there's been a lot of goalie injuries this season in the league, and you know, I wouldn't want us to go back to where we used to be relying on that, you know, on your one goalie. I like the fact that Moody's there putting a little bit of pressure on Bounds and, you know, taking the pressure off Bounds in another way, that if he's got a knock, he can sit out a game safe in the knowledge that, you know, there's a good goalie backing him up. And the other side is why, if people always say, you know, when we had Mike Will, when we got Murdy, oh, it'd be good for a lower ranked team to take a gamble on a British netminder. I think sometimes that's a bit too much of a gamble. You know, you look at the success, relative success Fife have had, Dundee have had this year. It's been built on signing, you know, a stud goalie, Manchester to an extent with Mike Clemente, and riding that goalie all season. You know, Coventry did it with Brian Stewart all the way to a playoff championship 2 years ago. So, you know, I don't think so. I think Murdy would probably want to stay. And I'd like to think the club would want him to stay. So it'd be considered, but I can see, I think there's more downside to it than the upside of that extra senior Brit. Yeah. Are you sure? You know, so I mentioned earlier about Guildford joining the team. Could you see the location being enough to tempt Josh Batchelor away?
Go on, Cara.
So he's just going to ask, and you know, he's not hit the heights he has in previous seasons. You know, he's had his ice time reduced in, you know, a number of games, sort of in the latter half of the season as well. You know, possibly could be the Devils thinking, or you know, that could even encourage his thinking that you need to change scenery.
I would imagine so. Like you said, maybe not hit the heights. I think Batchy's been great for us over the years, and I think he can still play. I think he's maybe just lacked a bit of confidence this year. Would I like to have him back? Yes. Would I like to see an improvement in his game next year? Yes, 100%. I think, if anything, he's gone a bit backwards, whereas in the past few years, his trajectory has been up and up and up. And and he scored some worldy goals this year as well as a defenceman. So would I like to see him return? Yes. Do I think there is the possibility that we'll lose him to a club like Guildford with that money and that location? Yeah, I genuinely think it could be a serious threat. They're going to need a stud Brit and someone to build their team around. And I think it could serve as the perfect place for him to go and change the scenery, as you said. And but then, does he want to stay at a championship winning team for a reduced, you know, for a slightly smaller pay packet, or does he want to go and play in Guildford for a big pay packet at the reduction of not competing for anything? So it all depends on your mentality, and it's going to be a very, very interesting summer with regards to what happens with Josh Batch.
Yeah, and I think worth noting that he may have gone back a little bit. He is still only 26, though, so he's golden 27 next year, Sean.
Yeah, the golden age.
Favourite age of a player. So, yeah, you know, there's massive upsides. I'd like to see us keep him. I think we've had a great defensive core this year, and you would be happy to see him all back for the first time in a couple of seasons. Say that. Did we have? Was there another question? Even though you've said that there wasn't, I feel like there was.
No.
No, we didn't have a question from Chloe Jones.
No, I don't think we did. Of course, we did. Chloe Jones asked, what were your high and low points of the season?
Who are you asking?
Anyone want to jump in? Because every time I've asked someone, you've asked someone else. So, Aaron.
I don't think I can pick one moment. You know, you've got the obvious.
Come on, get off the fence. Pick a moment.
All right, then. I'm not going to go for my favourite of the year.
Ugh.
I'll go for my favourite of the weekend. I know, it's just because this sticks in my mind.
Answer the question.
Right, anyway. It was definitely, Jeff Walker scores a goal for Sheffield. Rubs the ice a little bit, you know, a little bit of celebration. Where I think it was when Hotham was injured or just before. Hotham comes back, scores a beautiful, absolute beautiful and assisted goal, and then skates in front of the Sheffield bench, does exactly the same celebration. That, for me, icing on the cake. I know we lost the game, but that stuck in my mind since I was on the coach leaving Monday morning. That was absolutely... Because he's that type of guy, and you just, you know, you've seen him skate past the bench, give the ice a little rubber. Oh, I bet the Sheffield players were livid, and it was just an absolute spectacle to watch. But my least favourite thing, probably, although the amount of money that we raised, that the club raised for the Matchka was phenomenal, and seeing the team was phenomenal, I think my least favourite thing of this year was seeing how ill Scott Matka was, and, you know, it really hit home about how things can change so drastically. One year you're playing professional hockey, and the next you can, you could be in a wheelchair the next day, and it's really unfortunate, but I'm glad the club did the right thing and raised so much money for him. But yeah, that was my least favourite thing.
Choosing a least favourite moment of the season is, you know, especially with the hockey, is difficult. There were obviously lows in terms of games, but, you know, all barring the game on Sunday, were rectified with either a league or a Challenge Cup trophy at the end of it. And I don't want to pick the last game of the season that was an excellent game of hockey as my least favourite moment. It potentially is, but I just think it's the lack of response to bounds being run, you know, a number of times now. Certainly I just want to see us rectify next season. It's, frustrating. And you want your goalie to play with confidence, and, you know, it's got to be difficult for them to do that when, there's a recurring pattern of these things happening. You know, retribution not being handed out, and I know there's game issues, there's game management issues, but you know, sometimes things can be a little bit bigger than that. And my favourite memory is massively, there are like, literally, I could just narrow it down to a weekend and ignore the question to make my life easier. but I won't. So many, as Aaron mentioned, you know, the match, what an amazing, you know, sort of thing that the club did, you know, the work that went into it from so many people, you know, the money that was raised, it was, you know, such a huge highlight for the club and, you know, really showed probably British ice hockey and the Cardiff Devils at their very, very best. You know, some of the wins, you know, the shootout winning Brayhead, winning the league in Sheffield, you know, come on, that is the obvious one, so we ignore it. I think for me, it was standing in Belfast for what felt like ages, after coming back from the 3-0 deficit at the end of the second, 2-4-3 regulation, and just singing "Don't Take Me Home" until every Giants player had left the ice when they did a whole team shot off his back, and they must have hated it because they were right down in front of us, and it was just so loud, so constant, and it was the highlight of probably the best weekend of the season for me as well. So I'm going to go with that as my favourite specific moment of the season. Sean, what guess your picks?
My low point is the green shirt fiasco. I'll just say simply that, the green shirt fiasco. That is all that I will say on that, because I couldn't pick a very bad... Obviously, there have been bad games when we got pumped at home to Nottingham, we got pumped away in Nottingham, and, you know, we've lost games this year. Of course we have, and obviously the last game of the year stings the most, but, listen, nothing will tarnish this year. It's been an absolute joy to watch this year, and do it with the best people I know. And the high point... You think where did it peak this year? Where did it peak? I think on that Sunday or that Saturday in Belfast. I think Paul, you nailed it. I'm sorry to cop out and pick that one with you, but that was very, very special to be with everyone on a night like that, and. The guys just did so well in that third period, and that, I think that was the night where it turned, and that's the night where I think most of us knew that we were going to go and do this thing. We came out there and brought our A game and just turned the game on its head, and the fans did so as well. When we got the second goal, the fans knew we were back into it, and they gave it their all. And after the game, like you said, right until the last player stepped off the ice, Boomerang Corner was empty, the stewards were literally herding us out. That echoed through the SSE, And we've tried to emulate it a couple of games this year. Even the league win in Sheffield, where you can hear it from across the ice, it still won't come quite close to the intimacy that you had at the SSE. And that's my personal individual high point. But listen, we could go on. We could talk about this for hours and hours. But the high point overall this year, I think I just want to say that the high point goes to Ben Bounds, Tom Murdy, Josh Bash, Gleeson Fournier, Andrew Hotham, Scott Hotham, Mark Lewis, Mark Richardson, Patrick Aslin, Sean Bentivoglio, Patrick Bordelot, David Bryan, Chris Culligan, Guillaume Doucette, Joey Haddad, Chris Jones, Denny Kearney, Andrew Lord, Joey Martin, Jake Morissette, Matthew Myers, Luke Piggott, and Aidan Elmer. They have been the high point this year for giving us the best season of hockey in Cardiff we've had in a long, long time, and delivering that elusive league title. So thank you guys for being the high point.
Sure, it'll be very awkward now if the players listen to this podcast and you missed one of them out.
I don't think there's a risk of either of those things happening.
No, it would be
probably more risk that Sean forgot a name than a player. I think, you know, that is it. You know, we lifted them, Monty. It's, you know, been a long time coming. It's never been seen by the majority of our fans. And you think you talk about fans who were watching 20 years ago. They can name the team. They can name the lines that won the league in 20 years' time. Will have done, hopefully will have done it many, many times since. But the way you rattled them off, not as quickly as that, but you know, you'll be able to name this team. You'll remember everyone who brought the league title back to Cardiff, and yeah, it's just been a hell of a season. Everything is, you know, been an honour to be able to talk about it on podcasts throughout the season, and just discuss, yes, the best hockey that we've seen in Cardiff, the best year that we've had. Do tweet us your high points. You can tweet us your low points if you want, but hey, after this season, let's not worry about low points. Let's just have your high points. Let's fill Twitter with the best memories you've had of this exceptional hockey season. Sean and Aaron, thank you for joining me all season on the podcast. It's been a pleasure as ever. We will be back through the off season sporadically as and when there's, you know, enough news for us to discuss. So we'll announce when we're going to record and try and get some questions and thoughts from you in advance. But for now, what a season. What a season. What a year. What a team. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon inside, the Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside.